You're listening to Colt Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Atletico Madrid and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron. My guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat, making his usual Monday appearance, is Into the Calderon staff writer Rob Walker. Rob Walker is the guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. Rob joins me to talk about a historic night for Atletico Madrid on Saturday. A 1-0 win over Malaga, but not only that, it marked the grand opening of Estadio Wanda Metropolitano. At last, Atleti's new stadium opened to an adoring crowd of 63,000. They witnessed Atletico notch their second league win of the season. It wasn't a great game, but we'll talk about Antoine Griezmann's goal, his evolving role in this team, it appears. We'll talk about the strength of Atleti's defense, which has now kept three consecutive clean sheets, and where Atleti need to improve from here on out. It was a good performance, but will it be good enough against some of the bigger teams? One of those teams Atleti will play on Wednesday in the form of Athletic at San Mamés. We'll preview that game, discuss the Basque side's pace, what Atleti can do to negate it, and we'll give our predictions. Before we continue, a few reminders. Head over to Facebook, facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon, like ITC there. You can also listen and subscribe to all new and archived episodes of Colt Gennaro Chat on iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, and TuneIn, pretty much any podcasting platform you like. And finally, Colt Gennaro Chat has a Patreon page. You may have heard about this, but just a reminder, head over to patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat if you're interested in supporting the show, if you want to find out the benefits of being a patron and the benefits of supporting Colt Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast on Atletico. We'll be back with Rob Walker after this. It's like a time-tested strategy. Turn the damn thing off and turn it back on. Yeah. It really works with anything. Yeah. It's impressive. Let's do the whip around for week number 4, Numero Cuatro. We start on Friday, Eibar with a 1-0 win over Leganés, the cucumber growers, with a second consecutive loss. Alex Galvez, the only goal in that game for the Basque side. On Saturday, Levante and Valencia playing out a 1-1 draw. That is Valencia's third consecutive draw, Levante's third consecutive draw as well. Neither team has lost so far. Getafe 1, Barcelona 2, Paulinho scoring the winner at Getafe, and Ousmane Dembele probably out until the new year with a thigh injury. So, good mix of a good and the bad for Barca there.
Yeah, that's disappointing for them. That's a big loss.
Yeah, spent all that money to get him, and he's gone after two games. Real Betis 2, Deportivo La Coruña 1, Pepe Mel's figurative grave gets a little bit deeper as Depor still have not won through 4 weeks. They've lost 3 games and they've conceded a league-high 11 goals. Alaves 0, Villarreal 3. Alaves did sack their manager after this one. It looks like they're going to hire Javi Gracia in his stead. Alaves through 4 weeks, no goals and no wins, no points either, as Villarreal, pretty clinical finishing on their part. Not a bad game. Alaves didn't play horribly, but Villarreal just finished their chances. Alaves didn't. Girona 0, Sevilla 1. Difficult for Girona. Thought they had enough to get the draw, but Alex Grinnell missing a penalty in stoppage time that would have canceled out Luis Muriel's 69th minute goal. Nice.
almost.
Las Palmas 1, Athletic Club Bilbao 0. Difficult for Athletic after a European game midweek. They rested a bunch of guys, and it didn't quite work out for them as Las Palmas. Apparently, Alberto Aquilani is a thing again. He played really well in this game.
Yeah, where has he been?
I don't know.
Does anyone know?
He was at Pescara last year in Italy, but now he is apparently at Las Palmas, and he played really, really well in midfield for them.
He's been around forever.
Yeah, he really has.
Absolutely ever.
Vitolo started this game. He's just fresh off injury, though. He played about an hour.
Vitolo, watch. 2017-18.
The final game Sunday, Real Sociedad 1, Real Madrid 3. No real problems for Madrid, who swat aside a La Real team that had been playing really, really well, but Madrid are a lot better than them.
And they did have the classic guy scores a goal and then promptly scores an own goal.
Yeah, wasn't that amazing?
Real Sociedad. And, like, that's always good.
Wasn't that amazing? Like 8 minutes apart.
Ah, what a shame. That's a bad day.
And we are recording this before the final game of the week, which is Espanyol and Celta. That kicks off Monday night. And then we have the midweek fixtures starting Tuesday. So very busy week ahead.
Glad we're done with that international break so we can just have a bum rush of matches.
Yeah, there's another one just around the corner, though. In a couple weeks. But let us not talk about things that depress us. Instead, let's talk about the one result we did not get to in the whip around. Atletico Madrid 1, Malaga 0. Again, that is Atletico 1, Malaga 0. A historic night for Atletico as they opened a stadium called Wanda, the Wanda Metropolitano, in style with a pretty much a classic display, wouldn't you say, Rob?
Oh, big time. This was classic Atletico. Not exactly the best match to watch, but very standard procedure and handled a Malaga team who are pretty bad.
We did the preview pod after the Roma game. We talked about the Malaga game to preview it, and I kind of said I didn't think this would be 1-0. So, of course, it finished 1-0. I thought this would be, like, a rout. Like, Atletico would just tear Malaga apart. But then I saw the team sheet, and you can guess what I thought when I saw the team sheet.
Yeah. You're not a fan of the four central midfielder plan. Four
central midfielders. Cholo, stop. Please.
You're killing us.
You're killing me. It's like Arrested Development. You're killing me, Buster. You're killing me, Diego.
Yeah, that I don't think that worked. Hopefully he maybe learned. Now in two games it didn't work, so maybe?
Well, it's interesting because a couple people on Twitter pointed this out, and I think it's an interesting point, is that when Simeone plays with a flat four and all central midfielders, it goes a long way toward just, you know, maybe not brutalizing, but it goes a long way toward Atletico gaining control in midfield and wearing down the opponent. And it's especially true when Atletico don't have the ball. Now, Atletico had 66% possession in this game. But trying to make your way through that maze of bodies, trying to make your way through four really, they're all tough tackling midfielders. They all track back dutifully. Trying to make your way through that for 45, 60, 75 minutes, it can be tough. So I can understand that, but you also have to juggle that with you're trying to score a goal or two. And it's just not the best formation for doing that.
Right. I mean, I'd understand it more if you went to that kind of system towards the end of a match if you wanted to hold on to a result. But if you're trying to get goals on the board, it's not the best for that because nobody really knows where they're supposed to be a lot of the time.
I guess he doesn't really see a difference between going to it at the start of the match and going to it at the end of the match. He's going to do it one way or another. And Atleti have scored 8 goals this season, 6 of them come in the second half. So it seems he prefers to do it at the start of games.
Yeah, and we also just don't have that many great wingers that we can rely on that can play in those wide roles. So, I mean, I get it, but it just doesn't work.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It sort of worked in this game, although Atleti were really not good in the first half. Five shots, 1 on target, and it was not really a great opportunity. But in the second half, Cholo took off Tomas at halftime, put Carrasco on, and it you'd be shocked by this, but Atleti immediately looked more dangerous.
Yeah, who would have thunk?
Who would have thunk it? That you put on a true wide man with explosive pace, and you look better. Who knows? Like, within 5 minutes, Atleti had 2 really good chances. Koke had 1 in the 50th minute that he should have buried, but he didn't. Felipe made his way into the box, kind of lost the ball a little bit, and then Koke kind of scooped it up. And just couldn't lift it. It was like right in front of Roberto.
He scored 2 goals in a game earlier this season, so he saved him for later.
Right. But no, Atleti looked so much more dangerous, and that paid off in the 61st minute when Angel Correa, with as Griezmann called it after the game, a moment of genius on the right hand side, made Federico Rica just look completely foolish before crossing it to Griezmann, and Griezmann slotting home with the right foot. And it made it 1-0.
Yeah, he keeps on looking good this season. I mean, even when he's not scoring the goals, I mean, he's still looking like his last season self in terms of assists.
Who did you think would score the first goal?
I'm trying to remember who I voted for. I think I voted for Correa, actually.
You voted for Correa?
Yeah.
I thought it would be Saul.
Yeah, I figured that Griezmann was too obvious of a choice, but, you know, you probably should go for the obvious choice.
Yeah, but the obvious choice was, in this case, the right one.
Yes, indeed.
It was. And
I mean, he hadn't scored this season, so, you know.
No, he hadn't. He had been overdue. We talked about it on, when did we do the podcast? Thursday?
Yeah, he was definitely due.
We talked about it Thursday, how his first couple games had not been very good. He was better in this one, as we'll dive into more detail on that. But really, Malaga didn't threaten a whole lot until very late when Diego Roland came on, kind of skinned Godin in the box, and then had just this rasper of a shot stopped by Oblak. Oblak had to just get a couple fingers to it. He could only get a couple fingers to it and just parry it over the bar. That was really Malaga's best chance of the second half. Their other really good chance was through Borja Bastón on a counterattack at the end of the first half. Oblak made a great save on him as well. Really a double save as the ball bounced out to Chori Castro. Other than that, Oblak didn't have much to do. Atleti with conceding 5 shots on target. Only a couple of them were really dangerous, though. And over the last 3 games, that's now 5 shots on target in 3 games conceded. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's amazing. Defensively, they look really solid, despite a lot of switching around at the back. They look pretty consistent.
Yeah, so speaking of the defense, I noticed in this game that there were a lot of attacking runs from the center backs, Godin and Lucas. That was pretty interesting. They were playing very, very high up the pitch. Now, Atleti had a lot of possession, and 66% is one of the highest figures you're ever going to see Simeone's Atleti accrue, but did you think that was interesting that Godin and Lucas especially, who I want to talk about, that they were playing so far up and that they made a few attacking runs?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I like that. I like for your center backs to be able to make forward pressure. I mean, you see some of the best center backs in the world, like Leonardo Bonucci and Mats Hummels for a while, where, you know, they can make forward runs and, you know, slice open defenses because they're not expecting to have to mark a center back. But yeah, I think it's good, and both Godin and Lucas are technically quite good, so I think they're both kind of capable of that.
Yeah, and Lucas in particular, just another awesome game for him. He's done this a lot. There was one particular thing he did in the first half that really caught my attention. Malaga had a counterattack around the 29th or 30th minute, and it looked like, I can't remember who latched onto the ball, but he was like sprinting free. And in comes Lucas off the screen. He comes on the screen, takes the ball away, forces it out for a throw.
Yeah, I mean, and he has the pace to make up for it.
He
was to get caught out. So.
Oh yeah, and that's my point. Is that Lucas? We don't really talk about how fast he is enough, and he can make up for. You know, we talk about Jimenez and what his best qualities are there. His pace and his explosiveness. Lucas has a bit of it too. And that is a big problem for Jimenez, because his theoretical biggest advantage, Lucas kind of has now.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, unless, I could only think, I guess, Josema would be preferable if you wanted to mark against a more physical center forward, because Lucas isn't the biggest, and Josema's a bit thick in terms of the physicality, so that may be his the upper hand he has on Lucas, but yeah, Lucas has been great this season so far.
Yeah, that's a good point, is that Godin and Lucas kind of play similarly. Lucas has a bit more pace. Lucas is a bit more dynamic. He can play on the left-hand side as left back. Godin, we kind of know he's becoming like the wise old veteran back there, the wise old professor at the back. And Jimenez is a bit like the wily pupil who, like, really is boneheaded sometimes, but can make absolutely brilliant plays and uses his physicality to punish guys. Lucas doesn't really do as much physically, but he plays a bit more like a younger, faster Godin.
Yeah, he's a very intelligent player. He reads the game very well defensively, which is such a good thing for a guy his age. I mean, he's so young, but yet he looks so composed when playing in a central defensive role.
Yeah, he's clearly a natural center back. He can do a job at left back. As long as Felipe is good, I think we mentioned this before, as long as Felipe is good, there's no need to really freak out about the backup left back position, because Lucas can play it in a pinch.
Yeah, I'd rather not have Lucas play there just so he can get the most minutes possible at center back.
Yeah.
But yeah, he can certainly do a job.
I mean, Lucas completed 96% of his passes. He made 69 passes, completed 96% of them. That's impressive.
Amazing.
It's really, really good.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
And I mean, he made a lot of passes too, and they weren't just, you know, backwards and side to side. I mean, he made some pretty good forward passes.
Yeah, Godin did as well. 10 long balls attempted, 8 of them were successful. Pretty good ratio.
Very.
Yep, Godin looked great. Moving a bit more forward up the pitch, as much as we kind of don't like the 4 central midfielder approach that Simeone has gone with, do you think Tomas was the right guy to come off at halftime?
I wouldn't have had a problem if any of the three really had come off, or the four, rather, had come off. But, you know, I kind of get it, because Thomas was... He's played all the minutes so far this season, so yeah. I get giving him a half off. I think that's fine. I think he probably would have been useful. I think Gabby maybe would have been the second guy you would think about taking off. But, yeah, I don't have a problem with any of the four if he had taken them off. But, you know, Thomas deserves a bit of a rest.
Yeah, watching Thomas versus Gabby in this game, I kind of agree with the decision. I mean, Thomas wasn't bad, but you needed to take off someone. You needed to add Carrasco's pace. You need to put that in the game. Gabby's distribution, I thought, was a lot cleaner. They were relying on him a lot more than they had even last season. Gabby led everyone in this game in touches, 116 touches, nearly 100 passes, and he completed over 90% of his passes.
Yeah, he looked like last season's Gabby. He hasn't really been great so far this season, but this was certainly his best performance by far.
Yeah, he played really well. So I didn't really have a problem with it. You had to take one of them off, I think. Thomas wasn't bad, but
no,
they were relying on Gabby a lot. Koke and Sowell never get minutes off. Like, they never come out early. So Thomas was probably, and especially since he played the first few games, Thomas was probably the most likely one to come off.
Right, and you know, if you look at where the four of those central midfielders were making their passes, I mean, Saul, Gabby, and Thomas's are mostly in the center of the field, but Koke's, it's kind of shocking if you look at his pass map, like, only a few are in the center of midfield, so he was mostly on the left and right side.
Yeah, Koke kind of drifted everywhere in this game, and I've expressed worry about that before, because when Koke tries to do too much, sometimes he doesn't really do anything.
Right.
Yeah, his
heat not map a lot kinda, of forward passes in this match.
Yeah, his heat map kind of ran all over the place. Gabby was focused a little bit toward the right-hand side, like center right.
Yeah.
Kind of overlapping with Sowell's space at times, but that's what happens when you play those four guys. Like, they'll be really good defensively. You won't concede. But, like, moving forward and trying to create, you know, openings, it's very difficult to do because none of them is a natural creator.
Right, and generally, if you look at their pass maps, I think Gabby and Thomas were the furthest back, for sure.
What did you make of Carrasco's performance?
I think he was good. I think this was probably one of his better performances this year. I think he added a lot just coming on. I mean, he didn't necessarily make, like, the biggest contribution, but I think his presence there gave Atleti a whole nother dimension of their attack.
Yeah, I think so, too. Just him being out there kind of opened everything up a little bit more. Because Malaga's defense was barely challenged in the first half. It was much too comfortable for them. When you throw Carrasco out there, he can make those runs. He can play on either the left or the right. And he's just got so much explosiveness and potential explosiveness. You have to keep an eye on him. And that opens up space for others.
And when you're playing against a guy in Malaga's kind of shaky defense, if they're playing against a guy who they know can just skin them for pace at any kind of time and also have really good take-ons as well, I mean, he can get past a player very easily. So that just added a big positive to Atleti's attack that they didn't have in the first half.
Yeah, it did. Carrasco looked aggressive. He looked like he was definitely going for goal, but then he always does. Three shots, nil on target, but a couple key passes, and that's important for Carrasco because criticism that he's received for, like, never passing.
Right.
Like, look, I want Carrasco to do well. I want him to do so well because I know he can. The potential for him to become a top-flight winger is there.
Yeah, that's the annoying thing about Carrasco is he's so good. It's just sometimes he is a little bit boneheaded.
Yeah. Correa and Griezmann. Let's talk about those guys.
It's what we wanted. It's what we said last week. It's what we wanted.
It's what we wanted. And I thought it was interesting because I don't think it worked out perfectly. Correa is kind of playing Griezmann's role right now. Griezmann is playing as a number 9. I'll talk to him about him in a second. But Correa was a lot of the times this game picking the ball up near midfield. He was drifting kind of all over the place. He, as the game went on, he kind of became more of a winger with his crossing and with his dribbling, his interplay with Juanfran. It kind of feeds off of what we've been talking about with Correa possibly being Griezmann's replacement when Griezmann does leave. Simeone is kind of grooming him for that already, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think they were both playing in kind of similar roles. they both kind of like to float around, not as like a very static number nine, which is sort of the standard, but, you know, both of them like to sit further back, pick up the ball from deep, and then move forward with the ball, make passes and such. But I think he was fine. I mean, between the two of them, they only had three shots, which isn't great. I mean, obviously one was a goal, but that's not brilliant from two strikers.
No, it wasn't. But I thought Correa was really good, actually. I thought he was excellent. It's difficult because Correa and Griezmann are similar. They both prefer to be second strikers, and Simeone knows that it can't work if they both play like, you know, like they like to play. It was a little awkward at times in this game. I think when Simeone when Correa became basically a winger later in the second half, that's kind of when things opened up and Griezmann started making those runs. Griezmann was playing basically as number nine in this game. Only 31 touches for him in 90 minutes, which is much fewer than we expect to see out of him. We usually see him around 60, 70 touches. When Atleti had this much of the ball, he only had 31 touches. And his runs were intelligent, but a lot of times they were kind of forcing him the ball. Felipe Luis was crossing to him a lot. But Griezmann, to his credit, made the intelligent runs, especially on the goal when he saw Correa's move on the right-hand side. Got just a little sliver of space, and really that's a number nine's finish with his off foot, his right foot.
Yeah, it was a very good finish, and that's what we want to see from him this year, is be a little bit more central and more forward than he was last year, because there were times last year where he would rarely get into the box as much as we would maybe like. But you know, we have to make the best of a bad situation. Fernando Torres isn't that good. We just don't really have any strikers that complement each other. If Torres was good, you'd play him with Griezmann every week, but that's not the case.
Yeah, Griezmann in the past has made Torres, I think, better than he actually is, because Griezmann's so good, and Torres is the kind of striker Griezmann needs to be playing with. Not the striker, but the kind of striker.
Yes, exactly.
And like I just said, Simeone, I think, understands that, listen, Correa and Griezmann are his two best strikers right now. It's not really close. They are, like, by far the two best options he's got to forward. So you're going to have to make one of them a second striker. The other one is going to have to be a number nine-ish type of player. And who's the better finisher between Correa and Griezmann? Probably Griezmann.
Yeah, probably so.
One of them has to kind of make, I guess, that kind of sacrifice. And again, Griezmann was basically playing as a number nine in this game, which is not his best role.
I mean, I'm fairly certain that Simeone told him, like, you know, you got to be the nine for at least half of the season. So, you know, I'm glad to see him there, but he's not the best there. But I think he's so good, you can make do.
I mean, we'll see how in future weeks it'll shape up and how it'll pan out, but I think it's interesting. I think it's definitely worth keeping an eye on, of course, and how Griezmann, if he develops into a nine, if Simeone can remold him into, you know, becoming a nine at least till January, when possibly a new striker comes into play. Who knows?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that dynamic works against a team that is good defensively and is very disciplined, because you can see that becoming a bit of a, you know, run into a brick wall, since he isn't a natural number nine in the sense, the traditional sense.
Yeah, Atletico, speaking of running into brick walls, 17 shots in this game, just 4 on target.
And not too many from inside there either. A lot more from outside the box. Granted, they score from outside the box a lot, but even still,
not very many good chances. And Atleti got away with a few things in this game that they're not going to be able to get away with in future weeks, like against Athletic and against Sevilla, their next two opponents. They got away with a lot of stuff, I think, in this game. They played well, all told, deserved to win, but it's something to build on. They have to keep it up, though.
I think defensively is probably the best, sort of the most optimistic thing we have to go on, because they have been so good. I mean, keeping clean sheets, granted they've been nil-nils and 1-0s, but, you know, you have to be good with that after we've conceded a few goals early in the season.
Isn't the stadium brilliant, though?
It was really nice, and I was very impressed. The whole day, the fireworks show afterwards, I think they did a very good job.
The inauguration, King Felipe was there.
Yeah.
That was pretty neat. And it's, I didn't really realize it till kickoff. The fans are closer to the pitch than I thought they'd be.
Yeah, and I think the atmosphere is pretty good. I didn't expect for it to be that booming on the first match day. I mean, obviously it will be because everyone's excited, but we'll see how it goes from there. But I thought it sounded fun. I think a lot of maybe the problems were a little bit overblown. But we shall see, I guess.
Yeah, the first day really went off without a hitch, which is very un-Atleti, if you think about it.
Yeah, it seems like they figured everything out with the Metro and, you know, getting people to the stadium, and they fill it, and it seems like they're going to fill it for the next few games at least.
Yeah, 63,000 plus in attendance for the Malaga game. You know, someone who may say, well, they should have sold out the first day. Well, they were playing Malaga, and Malaga are probably going to be in a relegation fight. So, you know, we'll see what the attendance is when Sevilla come to town next week. Certainly when Chelsea come to town the week after.
Yeah, I think Chelsea's the one that, if you want to see the best Atletico atmosphere, I think that one's going to be intense.
Yeah, the Metro stop, you mentioned it. The Metro stop is in, like, a perfect location. It literally lets you out right next to the stadium.
And we were talking about that a lot last year, how that was a bit of a concern in terms of the public transportation for the fans.
And that's huge.
It's very good they worked that out.
That's huge because the stadium is so close to the airport, there's really no natural transport links there. It's basically the airport. And, you know, you can't really drive on a tarmac. So it's really important that they put that Metro stop there. They had the I know you saw this, the Walk of Legends. They vandalized Hugo.
Yes, I figured we'd get to this.
They vandalized Hugo Sanchez's plaque, which is brilliant.
Yeah, and Kun Aguero also got a little bit of the treatment. Not as much, but he certainly got a little treatment.
Arda Turan did as well, a little bit.
Understandable.
Totally understandable.
Yes, those three in particular. You know, I get why they did it, but, you know, a lot of people play 100 games for matches for clubs. I mean, it's hard to think about. I mean, people like Mario Suarez, who, of course,
Mario Suarez got one. Oh, my God. Yeah. I was going to say that. Mario Suarez got one.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you can kind of easily play 100 games if you play in, like, all the cup games and dinky games. But, you know, I get why they did it.
Yeah, you don't have to be great, because Mario Suarez was not great.
No, and that is why he plays in China now, at the peak of his career. Yeah.
Yeah. Indeed.
The alleged peak of his career, I should say.
But there were like 14 hours of, there was a live concert that was going on, there were a bunch of parties and stuff going on, and then just like they had the guy parachuting in to deliver the game ball.
It was like an NFL game with the Jets flying over.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what is going on here?
Kind of as a nod to Atletico's old roots as like the Air Force's team.
Yeah, yeah.
Atletico Aviacion.
There's some kind of questionable, you know, political history with that part of the Atletico history, but, you know.
For a time, they were preferred by Francisco Franco, but, you know, we don't have to talk about that.
yeah, fascist roots of teams are never a great topic.
No, we can leave that to the students of history.
Yes.
If there are any who listen to this.
Hey, shout out to the history majors out there.
Hey, shout out. Shout out,
we're all in this together.
But it was just, I think, a brilliant atmosphere. And the fans are only going to make it home if they want it to be home. And it looked like they did. Simeone remarked after the game how incredible it was to see all the flags waving pretty much in unison at the start. And just, it was brilliant. It came out, it went off really, really well.
Yeah, there was so much stuff over the summer of people that were upset about the stadium and the badge, and that is all understandable, but, you know, by the time you get to the stadium and it's beautiful and everyone's up for the match, I mean, you know, people forget about their positions on some of those things, and it was a great atmosphere.
At the end of the day, you know, everyone's there to support Atletico.
Yep, and Atletico have really good fans, and, you know, they make a lot of noise, as we know. And so hopefully this can be kind of like the new San Mamés move that Bilbao made. You know, that's the ideal, really, in terms of Spanish clubs.
You know, man, that is a great segue, because we can now talk about Athletic.
I'm teeing it up, and, baby.
Wow, you are on one right now, bud.
Yes.
So now we can talk about Athletic, and Athletic play them on Wednesday. Last season, Atleti drew 2-2 at San Mamés in a pretty difficult game. Season before, Atleti won 1-0 at San Mamés. The season before that, they won 4-1 in Antoine Griezmann's arrival on the scene. He scored a hat trick. Griezmann likes scoring at San Mamés. He has scored 4 goals there in 3 games since joining Atletico. You tipping him to do it again on Wednesday?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he obviously has his roots with Real Sociedad, the one of the other Basque teams, so he probably doesn't have a whole lot of love in his heart for Bilbao. So,
no, he doesn't. Last season, he was...
You know, be a good bet for scoring.
Last season, he was there, and after he scored the equalizer, he was like, this is my house. Yeah, as mi casa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, it is. And it can be again, hopefully.
Yeah, pretty impressive goal scoring record there. He's also scored, thinking back, because they had the goalless draw in 14-15. Then they had the 2-1 win in 15-16. He scored the winning goal in that game. And then last season at home, they won 3-1. He didn't score in that game. Yeah, so he has scored five times in six games against Athletic since he joined Atletico. He kind of owns Athletic. He likes playing them.
Yeah, and the thing I love about Athletic is their team rarely changes because of their
no signings.
Their policy.
No signings in 2 years.
I love it. I'm loving it. You never have to learn any new players' names.
Right, so I can still profess my love of Iker Muniain and not have it be out of date.
I remember when he was a young kid, he was so fast. It was ridiculous.
He's still a kid. He's 24. It's amazing.
How is he still so young?
Yeah, how is Laporte still 23?
And Iñaki Williams.
How is Iñaki Williams
great
still,
players.
Still 23?
Ugh. Amazing.
And then you have Adaris, who's 36, although I think he could be older.
He could be 55, and he'll still be scoring goals.
Yeah, he did not start their game against Las Palmas at the weekend, and Athletic lost, perhaps as a result of that. Iñaki Williams started as a lone striker, which is not what he's best at. Athletic have only conceded once in four games this season, but they've also only scored three. Adaris has scored two of them.
He's the danger man, as it were. One of them. They have a few.
Iñaki Williams has assisted on all three of Athletic's goals this season. He's a stud.
He's good.
He's
so good.
Yep. He's awesome. And they have a really watertight defense. They have Kepa Arrizabalaga, who is becoming one of the best goalkeepers in Spain.
Great for the under-21 team this summer.
You still have Laporte, who's 23, and it feels like he's been there forever. Unai Nunez, who has come from Bilbao Athletic, their B team. 20 years old, he's been great, of course, because they spend all their money on the academy instead of transfers. And basically,
he's awesome.
Yeah, and they have a new manager, Cuco Ziganda, since Valverde went to Barcelona. Ziganda, they pulled him up from the academy, so this is what Athletic do, is what they've always done. They are one of the most financially, if not the most financially healthy teams in Spain. They have a lot of money, but they invested all in the academy and producing all these awesome young Basque players instead of spending it all on, you know, outrageous transfer fees.
It's hard not to respect them, and the fact that they've never been relegated despite their self-imposed restrictions is amazing.
I mean, you got to give them credit. I mean, some people may say it's, you know, archaic, it's, you know, short-sighted, but this is the system they've always had, and it has always worked for them. They're always competitive. They're always tough to play against. They have great, great support. San Mamés is a difficult place to go to.
They've been in a lot of finals despite not winning any of them. Oh, obviously, they lost to Atletico in the Europa League, and they've lost several Copa del Reyes, all with Barcelona, I think. So
They beat Barca to the Super Cup a couple years ago.
Yeah, that did happen.
But, the first leg of that tie with 4-0, it was electrifying how well they played.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they ever expect to win the league at this point just because of their policy. But, I have to respect them for it because they build great teams over and over and over again. Their great players leave and their fans are pissed off about it, which I find is hilarious.
Yeah, if you,
but, you know, whatever.
If you leave Athletic, it's very tough to get back into their good graces. See Fernando Llorente.
Oh, man. Yeah. Ask Llorente.
Yeah.
Ask Javi Martinez.
But it is admirable, especially in this day and age, to have a club still doing this. And, of course, they have Raul García, still an Atletico hero, an Atletico legend. He, too, is on the Walk of Legends as he made over 300 appearances for Atletico. 300, not just 100 or 200, but over 300.
They may have to crank that appearance thing up to maybe, like, 200.
Yeah, they might have to, because there are going to be a lot of plaques here. Because, you know, of the current team, who's going to get one? Griezmann, Carrasco, Godin...
Koke already has one, should.
Yeah, Koke, Oblak, Saul. Like, there's like 8 or 9 members of this team. I'm not counting all of them.
A ton.
Yeah, who could have plaques. So they might have to bump up that requirement to like 150, 200.
Yeah. I mean, really, because the sidewalks is going to be full of them.
Exactly.
It's going to be impossible.
It's going to be impossible to keep them all clean.
Yeah, some of them. They may have to remove a few.
So who you got? What's your prediction for this one?
I think this is going to be a tough one, but I could see it being like a 2-1 for Atleti. I think they're in good form now. They're kind of rolling, but, you know, I think that front, those front players for Atletic are going to be really hard to keep out, despite playing really well defensively.
I'm going to go with 1-1. I'm going to pick a 1-1 draw midweek.
That could definitely happen.
Yeah, it could definitely happen. And then Sevilla the week after, that will be very fun and drama-filled.
Yeah, they're kind of one of those other teams that's in a little bit of limbo. Obviously, they're second right now, but I don't think that'll last hugely a long time. You know, they've changed a lot over the summer.
All right, Rob, what else you got?
Let's see, what else happened? I think that's about it. We saw Wanda for the first time. I still can't believe it. It actually happened.
A stadium called Wanda.
Whew, lovely. glad to be there. I've had two stadium openings for some teams in 1 week, so I'm used to this now.
Oh yeah, haven't you?
Obviously, the Atlanta stadium opened this week as well. So
yeah, that's
I'm ready. I'm in the mood.
That's a beautiful stadium too. I was watching the game last night. That's an awesome stadium.
It looks very cool, and you know both the footballs are there, so gotta like that.
Atlanta United selling out. Falcons selling out.
Whew. Yeah, I mean it's a good time, a rare thing to say for all the Atlanta sports.
Yeah, for Atlanta sports especially, yes.
Oh man, it's a rough road.
Yeah, and the Braves had that new stadium open earlier this year too.
Yes, they did. Oh yeah, I even forgot about that. I even went there.
You forgot.
I'm ready for the stadiums, baby.
That's how memorable it was.
Yeah, not definitely the bottom of all three, I would say, but you know, whatever.
Well. That is Rob Walker. You can follow Rob on Twitter at rwalk03. Rob, thank you so much for joining me on Colt Chinero Chat today.
A pleasure, as always.
I'd like you to stick around for just a second while I finish off the sign-off message. That's Rob. I already talked about him. You can follow me on Twitter at jbberen, the JBBEREN. Follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. You can like Into the Calderon on Facebook as well, facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. What was I doing next? You can subscribe and listen to Colt Chinero Chat on iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, TuneIn, basically your favorite podcasting platform. And check out our Patreon page if you're interested in supporting the show. Patrons are entitled to some really cool benefits. So head over there, patreon.com/Colt Chinero Chat, if you want to learn about all the benefits inherent to being a Colt Chinero Chat patron. We'll be back next week to discuss Atleti and something. We'll talk about something next week. Until then, adios.